2018 is coming to a close, and it's time to review how it went. Really, honestly, stick with us because it's a valuable exercise here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And we think about New Year's resolutions and what we vow to do starting Tuesday. It's even more valuable to take stock of what just happened, and we have some expert help on how to do this. Alice Boys is author of The Healthy Mind Toolkit and The Anxiety Toolkit. She also blogs at Psychology Today. Her recent piece there is 20 Enjoyable End of Year Review Questions. Alice, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, nice to be here.
So why do you think it's valuable for us to take this chunk of time to reflect on our past year?
Yeah, I think that it's just easy to overlook everything that's happened in a year. So people that are self-critical especially tend to really overlook all of the ways that they've developed as a person and all of the strengths and positive experiences that they've had during the year, and can kind of get a little bit over-focused on just sort of ticking off goals and maybe don't focus enough on all the small successes and things that we accumulate sometimes without even really realizing it.
Yeah, those are the finer moments perhaps that we gloss over because we're just so intent on forging ahead, plowing forward, looking ahead. And this is a time of year when there are so many New Year's resolutions out there and how we craft one and what we're going to do. But you think that we can make achievable resolutions without taking some time to really think back on the year that was?
Yeah, I think it's sometimes people have resolutions that they kind of roll over from one year to the next and maybe never achieve. Like every year the person decides that they want to, you know, read more fiction, or they want to learn a language, or all of those kinds of things that maybe are just are difficult with all of the demands of life that come up. And so sometimes it's good to think back about what were the achievements that were meaningful for you during the current year, and use that information to kind of shape your goals for the upcoming year.
Yesterday, I was like just going through the internet and found so many different prompts, so many different questions on how to do this sort of self-reflection on the year. And you wrote this piece, 20 Enjoyable End of Year Review Questions, and yours were more fun. They were more accessible to me. Can you talk a little bit about why you wrote this piece?
Yeah, a lot of my audience my first book was about anxiety, so a lot of my audience tends to be people who are lean toward anxiety, who are perfectionistic, who are overachievers, and who are self-critical. And so the questions are aimed at helping people who lean that way to see their life in a little bit more of a balanced way, rather than just seeing their life as all about ticking off goals that maybe sometimes aren't that meaningful in and of themselves, of seeing that life presents a lot of opportunities for growth outside of picking kind of really specific goals, like I'm going to read a book a week for the year or those kinds of things. I mean, those kinds of goals can be fun, but there are also lots and lots of opportunities to grow that just come up throughout life. And when you reflect on maybe how you've taken some of those opportunities in the past year, it can help you see those opportunities when they just come up in life going forward.
Well, you take some time there to really help us focus on successes. What can we learn from our successes?
Yeah, you can learn all sorts of things. So people can learn that they have more resilience than they expected to. People can learn that they're more flexible than they thought they were. People can learn that what they enjoy is maybe broader than the particular box that they put themselves in. So often people think, oh, I'm an introvert, I like, you know, such and such. And maybe when they look back on the year, maybe something that they enjoyed was actually more of an extroverted thing. And so sometimes looking at that can help you see yourself in a broader way. And then doing that helps you realize that you've got more capacity than what you think of yourself as having, and maybe makes you want to take on a broader range of opportunities and maybe worry less about coping with some of the things that come up, like changes that life throws you during the year. Whether that's, you know, your boss all of a sudden decides they're leaving, or those kinds of things. When you see that you adapt to those kinds of changes and they can be really positive, you can learn to fear those kinds of things less.
And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, you want us to look at the things that went wrong this year, the moments that just weren't right. And why should we spend some time thinking about these moments that are perhaps uncomfortable to think about, to relive in our mind?
Yeah, I think it's good sometimes to think about things like something you tried that didn't work out, but where the process of trying that moved your thinking forward. So sometimes we might have an idea of something that we'd like for a long time, and then we actually try it and it wasn't all that it was, all that we thought it was going to be. But then that the process of trying it actually made you realize something about what you like or didn't like, or so that can be useful too.
Alice Boys is with us. She's the author of The Healthy Mind Toolkit and The Anxiety Toolkit. And her recent piece for Psychology Today is 20 Enjoyable End of Year Review Questions. Gathering your insights on this practice, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you make time for reflection at the end of year? And if so, what kinds of things are you thinking about? What do you see as the benefits of this kind of contemplation? Does it make you happier, perhaps more inspired for 2019? Does it work? Join in by phone at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Alice, I interrupted you there. What was the end thought you wanted to get across about looking at those low points in the year?
Yeah, just some other questions to think about would be things like, what did you change your mind about during the year? How has what you enjoy shifted during the year? So as we grow and change, often what we enjoy shifts. And thinking about that, maybe there's something that you've previously enjoyed where you're maybe becoming a more settled person, or things are changing for you. So those can be things that are interesting to think about.
Well, let's start digging into your questions. They're so good. We'll start out with question one. What was a new discovery you made this year? Talk about the benefit of this question.
Yeah, so that's just looking at, often our new discoveries come out of places that are really unexpected. So it might be that you try something that you didn't expect to like. So my spouse decided to join a gym, and it wouldn't have been my choice to join the gym, but we ended up with this family membership, and so I ended up going to the gym and quite enjoying it. So that's an example of how a new discovery just can come out of just being open to something, even if it wasn't really that planned. So I think that can be interesting to think about what discoveries you really enjoyed. Maybe it was a friend who gave you a great recipe or a great TV show recommendation or anything, and just looking at where you made new discoveries of things that you really loved. Where did those come from?
We've probably heard it before. Self-reflection is key if you want to live your life by design. And who doesn't want to be more deliberate? Life coaches may school us to review each day, week, and month. But when we skip over the past 364 days, we have some catch-up. And so we are looking at self-reflection here on The Morning Show. Alice Boys is our guide. You can join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are you pondering where you are in life and where you've been? There's a belief that in order to embrace the new, we must first release the old. And part of preparing for the new year is taking stock of the past year to release it and then learn from it. Psychologist Alice Boys is helping us do just that. She is the author of The Healthy Mind Toolkit and The Anxiety Toolkit. She blogs at Psychology Today. Where are you at with reflecting on your year? Are you stuck on some tough questions? How do you measure your own successes and accomplishments? And what questions do you ask yourself at the end of a year to cultivate this kind of thinking? Let's talk about it at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Alice, let's head back to your questions now, including this one. What did you face head on this year rather than avoiding? What is the benefit of this question?
Yeah, that's really important to help people see how they've got the capacity to overcome something that they feel anxious or that they feel overwhelmed about, and to see the so people can see that they've got that capacity, because we get lots and lots of opportunities to feel anxious about things, to feel overwhelmed by things, and it's useful for people to see that they've got the capacity to deal with that rather than just kind of avoiding or using other strategies to try and escape it. But people can know that they can work through things more directly, and that's within their capacity.
Another question you include is, what was your favorite purchase of the year and why? And when I saw this, I was like, what? This is about materialism. We always hear that money can't buy happiness. So why should we consider this question?
Yeah, I think I could just, again, it's like about realizing that you are someone who is a diverse person, that there are sometimes things people say like money can't buy happiness, and we can all think of purchases that really made us very happy. And the example that I put in the article was my robot vacuum cleaner. So back in July for Prime Day, I bought this robot vacuum cleaner, and one of those sort of things I wouldn't have bought normally, except that it was on a really good sale, and I sort of stacked a couple of deals together. And oftentimes when you do that, you know, you buy something just because it's on sale, it turns out to be maybe not the best decision, but in this case, it turned out to be a wonderful decision, and it's just been so wonderful. Like it's given a bit more structure to my day. So
did it live up to its expectations? Is it working well for you?
I didn't have any expectations of it, and I think that was why what was so interesting about it is that it's something that you don't think of. I'm not someone that's into cleaning, so the fact that I love something that's for cleaning just seems so not me. But I think that's what's important about these questions, is that you realize that some of your answers are very reflective of who you think you are or the main ways that you see yourself. And then you'll have some surprise answers in there where you realize that you are just a kind of more diverse person than how you think of yourself.
My materialism answer to this question was, I bought this pair of wind pants for biking, my commute and biking, and they were really expensive. And when I bought them, I was like, oh boy, I don't know. I need these, but I should really try to either shop around or go with a lesser grade. And that was my one aha moment. It's like every day I'm so grateful for these pricey yet very practical wind pants. So that was my answer.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, isn't it, to hear other people's answers. And, certainly I think that just oftentimes we read psychological tips or self-help advice, and it just doesn't ring true. And this is one of these examples where you often hear that material possessions won't make you happy, but you can think of ways that that's not true for you. And I think this question really highlights that and gets you to think about the purchases that did make you happy. And maybe it kind of also gets you to think about the things that didn't, and see both of those things side by side and think more about, what made both of those things so.
Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Tim joining us from Eau Claire. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. One of the big things that I did this year is help several of my friends with anxiety symptoms, which is something the author might touch on. All of it with 25 cents, which sounds silly, but to me, anxiety is kind of a feedback loop where it builds and builds and builds and builds. Most of it's building because you're already anxious. And if you could break that, maybe you can get control of it a little bit. So I have my friends hold a quarter against the wall with their...
Oh, goodness, Tim, you're breaking up. And so I know that you have a little thing that you worked... Oh, can you try again?
Yep. I have my friends hold a quarter against the wall with their nose, and that's enough to break the feedback loop of anxiety sometimes. And now all of those friends keep a quarter with them, and most of the time just rubbing it between their fingers is enough to break that loop when they're out and about.
Wow, Tim, thank you so much for that. And just before you go, though, do you take time for self-reflection at the end of the year?
Oh, of course. That was part of my self-reflection.
And so what are some other things that you think about at the end of the year as you head into 2019?
I ask myself one important question every day, and I reflect every day. If I were to meet me, would I like me?
Wow. Thank you so much for that. Alice, your thoughts?
That sounds great. Yeah. And I think that one of the things is that the caller is highlighting how they've found something that they can apply consistently that helps them kind of regulate their behavior and regulate their thinking patterns. And a lot of that is key. So oftentimes the goals that we set for ourselves are just too hard to apply consistently, and we overcomplicate them, or the priorities that we have in life kind of shift around, and so some goals get dropped and forgotten about, and then we end up feeling kind of like failures. Whereas the caller's found a simple kind of saying that works for them that they can use consistently, and I think that's a great strategy.
And the caller also was very aware of how he helped someone else through the year and you know, focusing on anxiety.
Yeah, and that's, you know, anxiety is such a huge thing for so many people. And there are a lot of people out there that don't necessarily have, like, a clinical anxiety disorder, but anxiety is something that kind of holds them back in their life. And maybe they feel a little bit, they feel a little bit ashamed of it, or they feel self-conscious about it. And a lot of managing anxiety is just about recognizing that it's fundamentally all of the quote-unquote negative emotions are things that are designed to be helpful to us. So, you know, we're designed to feel guilt because it helps stop us doing things that would result in us getting socially excluded. And we're designed to feel anxiety to put us on into a hypervigilant mode to help us make better decisions and be more reflective, and recognizing that when we have any emotion that becomes a problem, it's just a helpful emotion that's kind of got miscalibrated and it's just gone into overdrive. And if you can see it a little bit more like that, you can learn to be a bit less scared of it. And you can also learn to recognize that there's nothing wrong with things like caring what other people think about you. Like, that's a hugely, you know, in terms of our evolutionary adaptation, like, it's hugely positive that we would care about what other people think of us, because we rely on other people to survive, both in, like, an ancestral sense and in a kind of modern sense.
One of the really special questions was, what relationship was the biggest positive surprise to you this year, and why? You know, as you think about this time of year, people like to think about their friends and their family members and their significant others, and really reflecting on relationship, what do you want us to think about there?
Yeah, so with that one of the things I'm especially thinking about is your loose ties. So I had my second book, The Healthy Mind Toolkit, come out earlier in the year, and I've had so many colleagues really rally around, so many colleagues like talk about my book in interviews that they've given, or write about my book and blog posts that they write, and all of that kind of thing. And it really was such a, you know, massively positive surprise that so many people that I just didn't know well rallied around to support the work that I was doing. And that's something to think about. So I think, you know, especially with that question, think about your loose ties, your weak ties. Maybe it was a colleague that you didn't know very well before that you got closer to this year, or those kinds of things, or a neighbour you didn't know very well that you became closer to this year. And think about how those weak ties can become important. And it's often in ways that the person that did the important thing might not have even realised that they were doing something important. They might have just thought what they were doing was small or run-of-the-mill, but it maybe was something that was really like the pick-me-up that you needed or the help or support that you needed at a particular time. And I think that can help you remember to do that for other people as well.
It is that time of year we set aside to think about what happened in the year. Make some notes. We're gathering your thoughts in this exercise, 800-642-1234. We're exploring some crafted questions by Alice Boyes, author of The Healthy Mind Toolkit and The Anxiety Toolkit. What's a skill you have gained confidence with this year? What did you try that didn't work out, but the process of trying it moved you forward in thinking in a helpful way? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. Perhaps you've been looking back at the year for some weeks now. You're ready to carry the insights forward and close the books on 2018. We're talking about the year-end ritual of self-reflection. Even when days blur together, months get mixed up in our mind, there's this time to ponder questions, and we're doing this ritual right now here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Alice Boyes is our guide. She's author of The Healthy Mind Toolkit and The Anxiety Toolkit. She also blogs at Psychology Today, and her recent piece there is 20 Enjoyable End-of-Year Review Questions. You can join in as you consider the prompts on the year at 800-642-1234. As you think about these questions we bring up, has your outlook on your year shifted in any way? And how so? You can join in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Alice, before we get back into the questions, I'm wondering, a lot of these questions require reflecting on little things that have happened to us through the year. And for many of us, and I speak from this to the heart, we can't remember what we had for lunch yesterday, let alone what happened a few months ago. Time really blurs. Are there any suggestions that you have on how to reach back for some of this stuff?
Yep. So one of the suggestions that I make in the piece is to think about the different seasons of the year. So one of the questions is to think about what achievement that you're most proud of from the year. And you can think back to the different seasons. So, you know, what were you most proud of kind of from the period of last winter and then the spring and then the summer and then the fall? If there are any particular different ways that your year is organized that helps you think about the year in some different chunks so that you can think about achievements that you are proud of from sort of each of those sections. And with all of these questions, you don't need to overthink the answer. So sometimes people see the word best or most or those kinds of things and they think, oh, there's a correct answer that I've got to think of here. But it's not really about that. It's, you know, oftentimes the first answer or the first instinct that you have is just a perfectly fine answer. Like, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to worry that you've forgotten something or anything like that.
Well, I like it, too, to let these questions kind of simmer in the back of your mind where something doesn't come to you right away, but you're driving down the road the next day and you, like, think of the question and voila, you have a really great answer to it.
Yeah, and also, you know, to use them as a conversation piece. So, to talk about the things with someone you're close to, or if you've got a spouse, like to think about what their answers might be. And so you think of, you know, you might think, oh, what do I think was the achievement my spouse was the proud, or my partner was the proudest of from the year, and then ask them and see how your answer compares to their answer. And oftentimes when we know someone really well, we might think of a good answer for them that maybe they are completely overlooking. And so talking about it and comparing the answers can make can make each of you see things in a completely different light, or, you know, using the questions at work just as something something positive to talk about. To you know, it's like the one about the what was your favorite purchase of the year. Like, that's just a fun thing to talk about in the break room.
Such a conversation starter. Well, let's get back to your questions now. And what's an aspect of self-regulation you've gotten better at this year? So let's dig into self-regulation. What do you mean by that?
Yep, so that can be really anything. So a lot of the goals that people come up with for the new year, like their New Year's resolutions type things, are about self-regulation. They're about going to bed earlier, or going to the gym more, or eating better, or all of those kinds of things. So any type of behavior that you need to regulate within yourself, in what way did you become better at that during the year? So you might see some, and that's, again, just helping you see that the things that you naturally achieved, and recognizing that there will be some ways in which that you have improved and that you are good at that, rather than perhaps just looking back at all the, you know, maybe goals that you set yourself that you didn't achieve or you fell off the wagon with. And often it's better to think about the ways that you've succeeded at something and use that confidence as a springboard, rather than just thinking about maybe what you haven't succeeded with.
Why is that important to, because, you know, those New Year's resolutions, you see the statistics out there and, you know, we break them. We break them left and right after the first week of January. So self-regulation is, it's hard to set, to know what is achievable and what's really accessible as a goal.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. So the best way to see what was achievable and accessible is to look at what you actually already achieved and see, look at how you did that. Like, if there's a habit that you've really incorporated into your life on a consistent basis, like a positive habit or something that you've got better at on a consistent basis, how did you do that? What were the strategies that actually worked for you to be able to do that? What sort of size of a goal was it? And then using that to shape how you think about your future goals. Because so many of the New Year's resolutions that people set for themselves are just things that they roll over from year to year. They set the same resolution every year and have given it up by, you know, the third week of January or the third week of February every year. And that's just really demoralizing. So if you can look at what you're already succeeding with, it can help you realize what works for you a wee bit better.
Well, you said the G word, goal, and so I know we have to go there, but that goal word has so much baggage, but your question is so refreshing. What's a goal you gave up on this year, and you're glad you did? So it's a really different twist on goals.
Yeah, so and knowing when to persistence is an incredibly important attribute. But it can also have a dark side as well. So especially for people who are very persistent, they can often find that they persist at things too long and don't give up soon enough. So there are just so many competing goals, and people who are sort of enthusiastic and curious and all of those kinds of things can end up with just so many things that they want to do. So thinking about what you decided wasn't a priority and that were you happy that you made that decision? I know one point, like a very, very long time ago, like at maybe like 10 years ago, I decided I was never going to try and have abs. Like, that was just never going to be a goal. Like, I was never going to read a magazine and decide, oh, I'm going to do lots of, you know, I'm going to try and get Britney Spears abs or anything like that. And just deciding like that was never going to be a goal is just so... that was just such a positive thing for me that I can now look at all those magazines and be like, oh, it doesn't apply to me. and it's just it's refreshing.
Cut it loose. Alice Boys is author of The Healthy Mind Toolkit and The Anxiety Toolkit. Her recent piece for Psychology Today is 20 Enjoyable End-of-Year Review Questions. And we want to hear from you. What skills have you learned in the last year? What's something you tried and gave up on this year and you're glad you did? Why or why not? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. So you really have us thinking a lot about the goal category, because you're putting goals in categories. What was a goal that you followed through on, a goal you partially followed through on, and you really want us to stop and assess whether these goals, we made it, we didn't, and where we can kind of put it in our life. And so why is it important to look back at the goal setting?
Yeah, so like one of my goals that I, from the past year that I just looked back on, was that I had, at some point during the year, I decided that I wanted to write 100 blog articles for Psychology Today, so like 2 a week. And I thought, oh, I know I've fallen behind on that. But in my mind, I thought, oh, I've probably only done maybe like 60 or something. And then when I actually counted them up, I realized I'd done about 80. And then it was realizing that even though I partially succeeded, I'd gotten a lot further than what I had, what I remembered. And so I think, like, looking back on some goals that you maybe think of yourself as having got sidetracked with, you can see some where you actually succeeded a lot more than you are giving yourself credit for. And if you're someone that's kind of really hard on yourself, you might be inclined to do that, to sort of look back with a bit of a biased memory to think, well, I didn't achieve this, but then recognizing that maybe you did better than, when you objectively look at it, you did better than what you're thinking.
Yeah, making some progress is better than no progress. There's also this area you want us to look at in skill building. What's a skill you've gained confidence with this year? It seems pretty straightforward, but why did you include that?
Yeah, so again, it's like people often put themselves in a box of things that they're good at, and don't think about themselves and their capacities as broadly as what they could. So maybe someone thinks of themselves as bad with technology, but there was something technology related that they got a lot better at, that they were able to master, and that is now just something that they do and not a big deal. Or maybe someone is not very confident about doing things around their home, like they're not very confident with DIY, or they think of themselves as like, they think of themselves as like leaving those, that kind of thing, to their husband or something, but there's something that they've gotten good at. And just seeing yourself more broadly than how you've perhaps seen yourself before, and realizing you've got more capacities and resilience than you think you have.
You also suggest that it's good to reflect on the simple pleasures that we may have especially enjoyed in the past year. So savoring those special pleasures.
Yeah. And simple pleasures can really change, like as your life circumstances change, you know, and like for me, I've got a 2-year-old, and so I've previously really enjoyed travel, and this year was a year where I've really enjoyed being at home. Like I've enjoyed painting with my toddler, mm-hmm. and a lot more of those sort of little simple at home kinds of activities that was not really how I saw myself as a person. And so when I look back at some of those things that I've enjoyed, it's like, oh, like I'm a different person than who I thought I was. And I think that's really interesting. Okay.
Alice Boyes stays with us as we reflect on the year. You have a line, 800-642-1234. Let's talk about those year-end questions in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. This is the time of year that is ripe for planning and thinking ahead. December brings us that feeling of what's next for me, and it's natural to want to skip ahead to the planning without fully evaluating what has been and looking more closely at our successes and shortfalls from the past year. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're working through that process of reflection on 2018 in order to create a clear roadmap for 2019. And author Alice Boyes stays with us. She's our guide. She's been blogging about self-reflection and how to go about it at Psychology Today. Your insights, your inspirations are welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you have a ritual of looking back on the year? What have you found by doing this? What prompts get you to new discoveries about your year and about yourself? And is there a prompt you wish to share with us? Let's keep exploring this at 800-642-1234. You can go ahead and tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Lynn now, joining us from Pleasant Lake. Hi, Lynn. Good morning.
Good morning. I really thought about a skill set that I'm in my mid-60s, so, you know, there's lots to learn every day. And I thought, well, what would I like to do? What would I like to learn? And I really was not really good with yeast spreads, and I just decided I will just try to work with yeast in some shape or form every week, just once a week. And I really probably in the summer didn't do a couple weeks, but I did everything from breadsticks to sourdough to working with intricate breads that are kind of cut and real pretty, and I really improved my skill set. Not that everything turned out perfect, but I'm better than I was when I started. And the neat thing that turned out as a side benefit was that I got to share a lot of the things that I made, and it gave a lot of other people a lot of joy.
Oh, Lynn, that's great. It sounds like it's been a real process for you, that the skill building has been.
It has. It has. And a lot of fun.
Alice, what are your thoughts on that? That, you know, she's gained a skill through the year, but by being diligent about it, taking it week by week.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great example. And again, that's certainly something where she's identified a structure for a goal that works for her. So she knows that once a week is something that she can manage in terms of the time and focus that she can devote to a goal. And she also, the caller recognized that she skipped a couple of weeks, and that didn't break the chain. You know, she was able to pick back up with the goal and didn't give up on it midway through. And it's such a the other thing was the caller mentioning that it was that not everything worked out, that wasn't the success of the goal wasn't reliant on every single baking experiment being a huge success for the overall goal to be successful. So yeah, I really love that example.
Moving back to your questions, what did you change your mind about this year? So why is it okay for us to change our minds on things and then reflect on when we did this?
Yeah, so again, just to see yourself as a more flexible person than what you maybe typically see yourself as. So when I thought of this question, I can think of things that family members and people I know do, and I thought, oh, that's a really stupid way of doing things. And then I've come to see the beauty in the way other people approach certain things about life. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that just helps me appreciate the fact that I can change my mind, and that it's worth looking at that other people who you might see as being kind of different from you, and looking at the ways that they do things to pick up little tips that you can perhaps incorporate into your own life if you're open to doing that.
And that you're willing to adapt, to try something new, because as humans, it's really hard to get out of our routines, and out of our minds, and being more open-minded about trying something different.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes it's life circumstances that cause us to adapt our behaviour. So like I said, like I've got a toddler. So that's a new life circumstance. So, you know, for example, seeing some ways that family members who are parents do things that I haven't really paid a lot of attention to before, that I'm now realizing, oh, that's a really good idea, or that's a really good way of doing things, and incorporating some of those things.
Yeah, toddlers will do that to you for sure. What did you try that didn't work out, but the process of trying it moved your thinking forward in a helpful way? That is also quite enlightening along this line of adapting and being willing to adapt.
Yeah, and like oftentimes that there, especially again, I have a lot of my audience is people who are who lean toward anxiety and perfectionism and those kinds of things, and who tend to be kind of overthinkers. And people who are overthinkers who have that kind of approach to life will often think about doing something for a really, really, really long time before they try it. And this question is really about recognizing that you can learn from doing. And sometimes when you actually do something, you just learn so much more about than you would from just continuing researching and thinking about it.
So a lot of the questions so far have been pretty straightforward, but there's one that may need a little bit more of a setup, an explanation, and it's, what's a thinking bias you've become aware of this year? Can you explain what you mean by that, a thinking bias?
Yeah, so probably the bulk of what I write about is thinking biases and understanding your own thinking biases, and then once you understand them, you can kind of adjust for those. So one of mine, and one that a lot of people who tend toward anxiety tend to have, is where you expect things won't work out. So you think, oh well, I could write to a colleague and ask them if they want to collaborate with me on a project, but they'll probably won't want to, so I won't do that. Mm. Or I could try this thing, but it probably won't work. Or there seems like there's this great offer, but it's probably a scam, so I won't try it. And just when you realize that you have that bias, you can notice that you're having it and then kind of factor that in and go, okay, well, I'm expecting that not to work, but I know that that's my bias. So, and I know there are lots of examples I can think of when I've expected something not to work and it has. So is there any downside to actually testing it out rather than just defaulting to the assumption that something's not going to work? Or then the other thinking bias that I sort of touched on a little bit before is the idea that often people who are anxious will think about decisions way too long. So if you've got, if you know you've got that tendency, maybe factoring that in and pulling the trigger on things rather than waiting until you're absolutely certain, and recognizing that there can be some pluses to that. There can be some pluses to making quicker decisions.
So as we move through lots of these question prompts, is there a way that we should track our responses, or a good way to jot down how we have thought about our responses and carry them forward?
Yeah, I think so. This isn't the type of exercise where you need to necessarily do every single question. So in the article, like, there are 20 prompts, but I've picked out like five, where if people only want to do five, they can just pick those five. Or people can just do just the odds or just the evens, or, you know, whatever it is that they feel is manageable to them. And it's, you know, you always get a little bit more from things if you write down your answers, but you don't have to either. So you can just think about things. You can write things down. It's really up to you and what you would like to do. But as we sort of said before, I think one of the hugely beneficial ways to use this is to use it as a conversation starter with the people around you and hear about what other people's answers are, because that's what's absolutely fascinating to me, and that can really make you think about your own. Hearing other people's answers can make you think about your answers that maybe you could have answered that you didn't think of.
Well, Alice, thank you so much for this conversation. We've appreciated it. Alice Boyes is author of The Healthy Mind Toolkit and The Anxiety Toolkit. She blogs at Psychology Today. Just ahead, we'll be talking about winter stargazing with a UW astronomer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to The Ideas Network.